Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everybody. This is Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. It is Tuesday, August 26th, and I want to thank you all so much for tuning in this hour, making this hour of Speak Up part of your daily listening. Before we start today's episode, I just want to acknowledge that we are on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. And for today's episode, we have quite a few stories from all across Canada. So quite a bit of a national scope that we have for this hour. Before we get into any of those stories, including some from myself, we have some music. This is from a local group, that's right, Vancouver Content, by the name of Nada, and this track is titled Red Light. Hope you enjoy.
So I don't pop out like a dry top. Taking care of me and mine, better call off. All the shit I had to do, better fall off. To a new dimension, but my peace of mind protecting. Baby, got a one-way ticket, don't test me. Better lose these digits, don't text me. If you try calling on my line, make sure your signal's on Hi-Fi. Can't ask for you every time.
But your network is your network.
I'm fine. Just need above average time. Sensitive to waves, see it as a sign. And if I'm oscillating or debating, then I'm better off getting dirty.
I lay up in my bed like, think I need to go red light. Think I need to go red light. Think I need to go red light. Need to stop so I feel right. Take a minute to breathe. Right. Think I need to go red light. Think I need to go. Think I need to go.
Bring in the big guns. Only going outside for some real ones. Any lesson I leave into the days don't go A1 in my true era. I dare you to say some. That's what I thought. Stayed on 8+ hours till the sun's up. Got a date with my duvet waiting on a new daylight. I got lost on you. Froze up like a yo game fruit. Light flashing before my eyes. Heart beating like I might die. Wish I could run, wish I could fight. Liquid gold, only thing keeping me sane. Memories on my mind, hits like a stain. Told my mama quit this time, but it hurts to lie.
I lay up in my bed like, think I need to go red light. Think I need to go red light. Think I need to go red light. Need to stop so I feel right. Take a minute to breathe. I think I need to go red light. Think I need to go, think I need to go.
I know why. Cold heart, time to get mine. Cut me up, now it's time to leap back in a line. When I'm feeling like I know why. Cold heart, time to get mine. Cut me up, now it's time.
And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for the hour. And coming up next, we have not necessarily a repeat, but a more condensed version of a new segment that I played last week. And this is my interview with the QP3338 president, Shaneza Bakis. And this is an interview that I did a couple weeks back because of a recent slew of layoff notices that were enacted by the Simon Fraser Student Society for positions such as, you know, the student advocate and other sort of operations positions and student supports positions. And the union came out pretty swiftly and decisively to say that these decisions were in direct violation of their collective agreement. As of the time of me editing this and recording it and putting it up, there is yet to be any sort of update on the situation. I reached out to the SFSS. It is something that's on their radar, but they have nothing to state at the moment. That is the correspondence that I received, which I thought I should say, because at the end of this piece, I do say that at the time of this recording, I had received no response. I did receive a response, but the response was essentially that a response is in the works. So with that being said, here is that interview. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. In July of this year, the Simon Fraser Student Society initiated layoffs for 8 of 20 student service and operations staff positions, a significant decision that, according to the organization, was made due to budgetary restraints and the society's current deficit. These positions were represented by a local nonprofit union organization, QP3338, who have come out publicly to state that these notices of layoff are in direct violation of the union's collective agreement with the student society. CJSF reached out to QP for more information on these alleged violations. We then were able to speak with the union's president, Shaneza Bakis, who provided a timeline of events regarding the layoff notices, the union's response, and the specific alleged violations of the union's collective agreement.
July 17th, starting at 3:18 p.m., we received by email 5 of the 8 notices of layoffs via email that were sent to the members. So it's a really poor way to deliver these news. And the key piece here is we were not given notice that these layoffs were being sent to the members. I can't stress how and what's the word? I'm lost for words, but it's contrary to acting in good faith. It's very disrespectful. It's unprofessional. And the fact is, they have a legal obligation to notify the union when they're laying off individuals, because then we have to schedule meetings with the individuals. So they did that. The emails went out. I saw these come in, and knowing full well that the entire membership is going to know that this is happening within minutes, I sent an update to the membership saying that the union has received these notices without prior notice that they were going out, and we will be addressing it with the employer. Shortly after that, the employer started holding meetings with those who were on site about the layoffs, again, without notice to the union, and without affording these impacted members their right to union representation. So when I received that information, I immediately went down to the SFSS with the intention of stopping those meetings, because that was contrary to the collective agreement. It's contrary to basic employment code. So when I did that, I absolutely did that firmly. I did it loudly. I have no apologies for how I choose to protect members. Well, I shouldn't say choose to. It was necessary to shut it down. I confronted two leads in the department, the HR lead and operations lead. Both denied that these were layoff meetings, but what else would you call them? I then confronted the SFSS president about it, and he claimed that the members did not need union representation. And I did raise my voice, and I said that is not his decision to make. This is their right, and we should have been notified. So that was that. That's what happened. And of course, I don't like engaging on that level, but we have to firmly and loudly protect the collective agreement and members' rights. And when they're being violated to such a high degree, we have no choice but to act in that manner.
Baucus then went on to highlight one of the specific sections of the collective agreement that the union is claiming was violated by the Simon Fraser Student Society, as well as how these layoff proceedings should have occurred.
So we left, we spoke with the impacted members briefly, and then we left, and then we're here picking up the pieces after that. In terms of Section 54 and how it should go and how it should have gone and what we're trying to course correct at this time is, so the notice is served to the union, and then the union and the employer would then meet over a series of meetings, the labor adjustment meetings, to decide how this is going to go. We would talk about everything from voluntary severance, if they want to put out a call for those that want to leave employment and offer enhanced severance above the collective agreement, ensure seniority is protected, other aligning articles are protected. And then we then pick, we arrange a schedule to have these meetings in person to ensure that the member is there with the appropriate HR forms and information that they prepare and that their union rep is there with them after. Because after this news is delivered, it is very hard for the impacted person.
Later in our conversation, Baucus also wanted to stress that while she understands the budgetary restraints that led to these layoffs, for the union, this is a matter of legality and labor rights.
I just want to say that I do understand the budget. The reasons given were budget. I do understand the concerns that they have expressed. We know that in this climate, that is a management right to restructure and to lay off. We know we can't stop it. The goal is to ensure that it proceeds fairly according to all relevant legislation.
Lastly, Baucus had this to say to SFU students who may be concerned about the impacts that these layoffs will have on student support services.
I really would. I would encourage a student body to press the council for explanation on this. I think this impacts them significantly from the fall. This is not next year. This is in a matter of weeks. They will see serious impacts to their educational and student experience. And I think they deserve answers. I think there's accountability here and transparency that's lacking. Yeah. And I would ask for everyone to please be kind to the QP staff, and because they're experiencing, there's things being said online, which we cannot control, but online bullying and harassment has a real effect on people. And the staff are significantly dedicated to the work that they do. Members routinely give of their own pocket to support student-funded programs, like the food bank. Like they do really good things from the goodness of their heart because they're dedicated to their work and their work ethic. So I would really ask for kindness both in person and online to all staff right now. They're going through a really difficult time.
Once again, that was our conversation with Shaneza Baucus, the union president for QP3338. On the recent notices of layoffs for 8 out of 20 staff positions in the Simon Fraser Student Society. After this interview, CJSF reached out to the Simon Fraser Student Society for a response to the alleged violations of their collective agreement due to the ways in which these layoffs were enacted. At the time of this recording, we have received no response from the organization. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, that was my segment on the recent notices of layoffs within the Simon Fraser Student Society. This, I think, is going to be an ongoing story and one that I'll be following very, very closely. So as soon as there are any updates, I will be on it, and I will be hopefully sharing it with all of you on Speak Up, which, you know, through the local journalism initiative and also just the support from the Community Radio Fund of Canada, as well as just the support I receive at the station, we're able to follow stories such as this, provide updates, and let you know about what's going on within your community, because sometimes these things can feel a little hidden, but hopefully, you know, the more that we do this, the better it will get. And I think it's gotten quite good. Coming up next, we have another song from another local Vancouver artist by the name of John Bentley. This one is off of his album by the name of Go Ahead, with an exclamation at the end. This track is titled Don't Be Sad. We'll be right back. You are listening to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That last track was from John Bentley, and it was titled Don't Be Sad. And coming up next, we have a news piece from essentially the other side of the country. This comes from CFRC in Kingston, Ontario. And this is an interesting piece. This one is titled Kingston Health Sciences Becomes First Hospital in Canada to Acquire AI Tool to Diagnose Coronary Artery Disease. I think this is an interesting piece because I think a lot of the time when there are, especially, a lot of the time when there are discussions surrounding the usage of AI and the use cases of AI, a lot of it has to do with things like writing and art and, you know, doing basic tasks for you and things like that. And, you know, I think there is a lot of very, very valid criticism in that regard. It'll be interesting to see where, I guess, AI can be utilized in areas such as the healthcare field and whether that's a good thing, what the implications are. So we'll see. This is a AI-powered tool that apparently will affect the way that coronary artery disease is diagnosed. So let's find out more.
Kingston Health Sciences Center is officially the first hospital in Canada to implement a groundbreaking artificial intelligence tool used to diagnose coronary artery disease. Coronary artery disease is the most common form of cardiovascular disease and the leading cause of death worldwide. It occurs when the coronary arteries become narrowed or blocked, reducing blood flow to the heart. Thanks to a $100,000 donation from local donor Steven Sorensen, KHSC has introduced HeartFlow, a revolutionary AI-based technology that's transforming cardiac care. HeartFlow enables radiologists and cardiologists to measure blood flow through a patient's coronary arteries using a non-invasive CT scan. Dr. Omar Islam, head of diagnostic radiology at KHSC, explained what the diagnostic process for coronary artery disease has looked like until now.
Patients with stable chest pain typically undergo a CT scan of their heart to look at the coronary arteries, which are the blood vessels that supply oxygen and glucose to the heart muscle. And a narrowing of those blood vessels, especially severe narrowing of those blood vessels, can be significant and may be a precursor to that patient having a heart attack in the future. So those patients are typically triaged by a coronary CT angiogram to look at those blood vessels, and it's a dye that's injected into the veins, and we get a 3D map of the blood vessels. So that's how it's done. And then those patients, if they have severe narrowing on the coronary CTA, are referred potentially on to the cath lab, so the angio suite, so undergo a minor surgical procedure where that narrowing is confirmed. And if the narrowing is confirmed, then a blood flow analysis is performed, looking at the reduction in blood flow through those vessels. And reduction in blood flow is actually the most important determinant of the risk of having a heart attack. So if the blood flow is reduced, that means there's reduced delivery of oxygen and glucose to the heart muscle, and then that patient is at risk for a heart attack. So it's not really the narrowing that's most important, it's the reduction in blood flow. So we cannot assess in a typical situation the blood flow on CT. We can only assess the narrowing of the blood vessel, and so those patients typically have to be sent to the cath lab for the minor surgical procedure to look at blood flow.
Now, using the AI capabilities of HeartFlow, physicians can measure blood flow directly from a CT scan. If the flow is normal, the patient avoids an invasive procedure entirely.
Yeah, so HeartFlow is a really cool new technology. So it's a non-invasive technology that uses those CT scan images and it extrapolates blood flow from the narrowing in those blood vessels. So in essence, it gives the doctor the same information that they would otherwise need to get from the cath lab doing that minor surgical procedure, and now we get that information non-invasively from the CT scan images themselves. So it really is a one-stop shop for assessment of the coronary arteries and risk of heart disease and strokes.
For patients, this means faster answers and better care with less risk.
It's beneficial for the patients in many ways. First of all, it's non-invasive. So a cath lab is a minor surgical procedure, and patients have to come into the hospital for a day surgery, and they have to have a puncture in their groin vessels or in their arm vessels, and they have to have dye and have pictures of their heart taken under radiation. And so, these procedures are performed every day throughout the country. They're extremely safe, but there's still a very small risk of complications such as bleeding or stroke. And of course, no one wants to undergo an invasive procedure if they don't have to. So in, up to 30% of patients, heart flow analysis avoids that patient from having to undergo that invasive angio procedure. Also, because the heart flow is applied when the patient has their CAT scan, they get the answer, the diagnosis, within a few minutes to a few hours, rather than having to wait weeks or days for the catheter procedure to occur. So they get an answer immediately. And because they get that answer right away, they can potentially get started on treatment and medications right after their CT scan with heart flow, rather than having to wait until after the results of the cath lab. Furthermore, there's less, obviously, radiation and contrast dye exposure because they're only getting a CT scan. They're not getting an angio procedure in the cath lab, so they avoid radiation and contrast dye. This is especially useful in some elderly patients or other patients who have diabetes and kidney disease, where the risk of kidney malfunction is higher with repeated contrast dye exposure. So in those patients, this test is very useful because we don't have to give the patients contrast dye twice.
This technology is also a game changer for healthcare providers and the healthcare system.
This is really, really an amazing tool from the healthcare efficiency perspective. The fact that the heart flow triages the right patients to go onwards to cath lab is really important because it reduces hospital admissions and procedure backlogs in the cath lab. There's, we have long wait lists everywhere in our healthcare system. So by triaging the right patient to undergo the right test, this saves time and, of course, avoids patients from having to undergo these unnecessary procedures. Therefore, the time in the cath lab can be directed to patients who actually need to be there. It's also leads to better outcomes because of timely treatment for those who need it. And for those who don't need the procedure, heart flow provides the reassurance that their blood flow is not reduced and is not significant, and therefore they don't need to go on to further testing.
Heart flow is now fully operational at KHSC.
So far, so good. We plan on collecting data from all the patients who undergo cardiac CT and heart flow analysis. We expect approximately 100 patients over the next 12 months to undergo the heart flow analysis. So we'll have a lot more information, coming up in the next year.
Teams at KHSC will be studying the technology's effectiveness in Canadian patients, with the goal of publishing their findings and inspiring adoption in hospitals across the country.
This technology, although it is new, it is a game changer. It works. It's been validated across multiple centers in the United States and Europe. We are fortunate to be the first site in Canada, all of Canada, to be using it. But we do hope that our use provides recognition and is newsworthy enough so that government officials, including Ministry of Health in Ontario, take notice and realize the value in, not just for individual patients, but for the healthcare system in implementation of this technology broadly across all sites in Ontario. We do feel that there's a big role for artificial intelligence in the healthcare system to work alongside the physicians, the administrators, and the staff to increase efficiencies, provide more accurate diagnosis, faster diagnosis, and improve the quality of care. We see AI as a tool that augments the care that we can provide to our patients.